Welcome, Enneagram enthusiasts and relationship renegades. Join your spirited hosts, Kelly Edson and Shiloh Warner, as they attempt to help navigate the tricky world of out-of-the-box relationships using the Enneagram, witty banter, and their own lived experience. Enjoy this wild ride through the land of love, laughter, and a little bit of chaos. This is Can We Get Your Number?
Hello, and welcome to Can We Get Your Number? I am Shiloh, and my number is 9.
And I'm Kelly, and my number is 2.
And we are metamours.
And if you don't know what that means, you will learn more as we go through the podcast. But in general, that in our instance, this means that my husband is Shiloh's boyfriend.
Yes. So we are not amours, we are metamours.
Yes, which is partner's partner.
Yes. So, let's see. So the point of this podcast is that we are polyamorous, and we are also, or we're interested in the Enneagram, interested in personalities, interested in how those things can make a relationship better, like knowledge of them can make a relationship better. And Kelly is very knowledgeable on Enneagram, and I am very interested, and I like to talk, and I like relationships, and I like to know about all the things. So we are going to give this a go and see how it works.
Yay. So I think we wanted to start off with talking about just in general what the Enneagram is and what that can look like when it comes to relationships. Yeah.
Yes. So let's go ahead and you tell us what the Enneagram is.
And that's a very loaded question because there's so much that goes into the Enneagram. When we were doing the research to start off the podcast, I realized that you can go real deep. We could do a whole episode on just where the Enneagram has come from. But to narrow it down, it's actually a personality system, but it is not based on personality traits. And I think what I am drawn to and like about it the most is that it is based on your motivations. So each number is going to have a different motivation. All 9 numbers could walk into the same room and do the same thing, but they would be doing it from different motivations.
So there's 9 numbers?
There's 9 numbers. Yes. And they are in a symbol. And the symbol actually has been around since forever. It can be traced back to antiquity. And as far as Pythagoras, is that how you say that?
I think that sounds great.
Okay.
And Greek? He's Greek?
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll go with that. It's a thing. But so the symbol's been around forever, and the Enneagram has been used in different aspects. What we think of as modern day Enneagram didn't come until like the 1960s or 70s. And then it wasn't until 1997 that the Enneagram Institute was founded by Don Richard Riso and Russ Hudson, which are kind of the modern day fathers of Enneagram as we know it now.
So when you say motivation, like every number has a motivation, what exactly does that mean? Like to you, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think a good example is like between the two of us, right? Our 2 numbers, 2 and 9, can often be confused for one another because they have similarities, but we have different motivations when we're doing something. So do you want to say like how a 9 would approach something with like what's their biggest thing?
So my motivation is always to keep the peace, to keep the harmony, to make sure everybody's like, we're all feeling calm and good about the situation. I like that.
Yes, and she makes sure that our whole polycule, everyone feels heard and understood and everyone is good and calm, right? Whereas my motivation is being helpful, or even more so being seen as helpful, which there's lots of key nuances that we'll talk about more in future podcasts. But, and the reason I want to feel helpful is because I want to feel loved. And so it's not that 9s don't want to feel loved or that 2s don't want peace, but we are approaching things from a different place in that even if we're acting the same way, it's from a different motivation.
Right. And so like for me, when I, Yes. So I want to feel loved just like everybody in the whole world wants to feel loved. But where I feel most relaxed in my life and I feel kind of most whole and like everything's going to be all right is when everything feels calm and relaxed, which doesn't in life, it's kind of hard, you know, just that's just kind of shitty some of the time. But like,
I know that's the thing is we all don't like our numbers a lot of times. Like you, and it's funny, I think I heard one of not the main two that we just talked about, but another Enneagram scholar talk about how everyone wants to be a nine, but like not like nines don't necessarily want to be nines.
I
right?
never want to be a nine. Like, I always am like so sad that I'm a nine. I want to be a seven because sevens seem like they're fun. I mean, not that I'm not fun. I think I'm pretty fun.
Yeah, you're fun. You're fun.
But also it's like, they're like the party person. And I'm like, I wish that was me. I don't want to be the calm zen person. Lame.
But then sevens don't want to think about feelings ever because feelings are scary. So it's like everyone has something.
I also don't want to think about
feelings. They're different. That's true. And that's, we'll get more into that as we go through about how every, you know, when we break down each thing. But I think like one of the things that the Enneagram Institute states is at its core, the Enneagram helps us to see ourselves at a deeper, more objective level and can be invaluable assistance on our path to self-knowledge. And Shiloh and I would argue that it's not only your self-knowledge, but it's knowledge of other people and knowledge of how all of those things interact in relationships.
Right. Yeah. So it's, well, it's good and helpful to know your own number. It's also really good and helpful to know the numbers of the people you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what this whole podcast is going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to show you how to use your number and the numbers of your friends and lovers and family so that you can create really healthy, really solid relationships.
Yes, totally. And the other thing that people often say, including our mutual partner, doesn't love the being put in a box piece of Enneagram, right? And a lot of people, no matter their number, are like, well, but I'm not just that. I don't want to just be that. But what a lot of times people will say when they talk about the Enneagram is that it's not that you're being put in a box. It's that the Enneagram is showing you the box that you're already in, and it's giving you the path to get out of the box and to grow.
Right. Yes. So of course, and of course nobody's ever just one thing.
Right.
I mean, but there's just so much nuance and, you know, for each person, but this is just kind of a little bit of a roadmap, to yourself and to other, the people that are around you.
Totally. And I think that when you understand it, then you're able to communicate with in every walk of life. Like our lens is polyamorous. So we're talking about relationships that may be romantic, may not. I mean, we'll talk about how polyamory can be all kinds of different things, but, It can also be when you work with your coworkers or when you work with clients, or even on the way to come up here and record this first episode, I was talking to one of my friends who is a doula and some of our mutual clients, and she's very familiar with the Enneagram system. And I was able to be like, okay, well, this, both of these partners are eights. So just so you know, if you're their doula, that's, you know, and she think of it. She's like, oh, great. I get along with eights. Like, it's, you know, like she has the framework of this is how those people need to function, because I'm also separately from Shiloh and our relationship stuff interested in how it intersects with like childbirth and postpartum and all of that. And I think it can affect how you operate in every aspect of your life, not just relationships. And that's where we're at.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So let's just really briefly dive into all of the nine types and see what their motivations are. And maybe if you find yourself in one of these motivations, you're like, oh, that feels like me. Like, you know, you might have a little research time for yourself to see, like, what is up with number six?
Yeah. Or like, oh, that might be my partner. Oh, that might be my sister. Right. Like,
yes.
And I always tell my clients when we're talking about Enneagram is when you read about your number, and if you read the like lower levels of health, like when you're in a stressful place and you're like, oh, that's me, then you're like, you found your number. That's a good way to know.
That is a good way to do it.
Because no one can really, like, no test can really tell you for sure. Only you can type yourself. So I want to say that too. We don't have like a favorite test for you to take or anything, because only you really can type yourself and know which one resonates with you the most.
Yeah. All right, so let's dive in.
Okay.
Let's get to it.
So I know it seems weird, but when we're going through in all of our episodes, we're going to start with 8. And that's because one of the Enneagram scholars that I follow says the way that she teaches Enneagram is always starting with 8 and then going around the circle 5, 6, 7. Because 8s and 9s are so different, so it helps to underscore the fact that that we're all different, right? Because a lot of times 8s think that everybody is like them, and so, well, why doesn't everyone think that way? And then you hear how 9s think, and you're like, oh, actually, we're all very different. So anyway, just that little caveat to start. So 8s, their motivation is most about trying to feel in control, and they're trying to be strong. Like, being in control makes them feel safe. Being in control makes them feel strong. And I'll let Shiloh talk about the 9, since that's her number.
And 9's motivation is to be peaceful, to like keep the peace. So my motivation always is like, how do I either diffuse or maintain this calm state?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Wait, diffuse a not calm state or maintain it?
Yes.
Calm
keep
state.
It. Yes. Yes. Totally. And then 1s are, they're all about doing the right thing, getting it right, being in integrity. Really, a lot of 1s, I mean, we all have inner critics, but 1s tend to have a very, very strong inner critic that they know has been around since they were children. And so 8, 9, 1 is the gut triad. We'll talk more about triads in future episodes, but those are the 1s that come, all of their motivation also is more gut centered than the other.
What does that mean?
So there's 3 intelligence centers. There's the gut center, there's the heart center, and there's the head center. So that means 8, 9, and 1 are all, when they're making decisions or when they are in motivation, they're coming from a gut sense, but they're coming from a gut sense in very different ways.
Okay.
And I think we'll dive more into that in future episodes, but just so the triads are.
So what's this next triad?
The next triad is the heart triad.
Okay.
So we are the feelers, 2, 3, and 4. So 2, like I mentioned, I am a 2. And so we come very much from a heart place and a feeling place. We feel first, then we do, and sometimes we think. Like, that's it. We'll talk about your repressed center and your dominant center and all of that stuff in future episodes too. But feeling is where I go first as a 2, and that's wanting to feel loved, wanting to help other people, wanting to be seen as helpful, nurturing, all of that. And that's what makes me feel safe, is to feel like I am being helpful and like I am loved and appreciated for what I'm doing. So then 3s, they are, I always like to say they're the gold star people. Like, they need the gold star. Mm-hmm. They need the sticker charts. They need the achievement-based, like, wanting to... They get a lot of shit done. A lot of numbers get a lot of shit done, but especially 3s, because they want to win. They want to achieve. They're very driven and ambitious, and they're trying to be the best. Like, that is their motivation. 4s are trying to be unique or to feel special. And I think we may talk about that more in future episodes, like when we're talking about polyamory. I think 4s have a unique challenge of wanting to feel special and then navigating how that fits in polyamorous relationships, where maybe you're not the only partner. And so how do you feel special when you're not the only partner?
Right.
So I think that'll come up for sure. Let's see. Okay, so that's the heart triad. Then the head triad, we go 5, 6, 7. The 5s are all about being understood and understanding. So they want to understand everything that's happening. They want to feel understood. They can go very internal. They're more observers. They're definitely coming from head place, right? That is where they feel safe, is I can't get enough knowledge. I have to get all of the knowledge, and I need everybody else to know that I have the knowledge. and that I feel understood. Right. And then sixes are trying to feel secure and safe and just good. Like, and that's a good comparison again to Shiloh with the nines, right? Safety may look like harmony for some people, but the safety is the ultimate goal for sixes versus the harmony.
So they might choose a lot of different ways to get there, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, where I'm getting there by feeling calm, like mm-hmm. my surroundings are calm.
Yeah, no, and I Emily, my girlfriend, one of my partners, is a six, and it always comes down to that, right? Like, okay, how is everybody good? Is everybody safe? Whereas is everybody peaceful and happy?
Yes.
Even if they're not. Not that you don't care if they're safe.
Well,
but,
right, right, no.
I know, when we talk about this, it's like all of it is there. It's just one is the primary thing.
Right, yeah. Yes, yes. And obviously, if somebody is safety is being threatened,
yes,
then that is, makes me feel very
not
out
calm.
Of sorts, and so I have to resolve that.
Yes, yeah. So all, there's so much nuance to it, and I think that's what I like about the Enneagram too, is it's not like, oh, you're an INFJ or whatever the, you know, Myers-Briggs personalities.
There's, which, what are you on that?
ISFJ?
Oh.
What are you?
ENFP. ENFP.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. So, well, that was another one of our things, rabbit holes, if we want to know where the Enneagram crosses with everyone's Myers-Briggs. But there's more, because there's growth and strength or growth and disintegration in Enneagram. Like when you're in growth, you're going towards another number, and when you're in stress, you're going towards another number. So we'll talk about that in future episodes, but there's just more nuance to it. That's
right.
Why I'm always like, you're not in a box. There's so many other pieces than just your main number. So
wait, seven is
the last one. The one that Shiloh said she wants to be.
I want to be a seven.
They want to be happy and have fun and avoid pain. So negative emotions, they really, really are like, no, like I don't want to think about that. I'm not going to. I'm going to just have fun and be happy and free and very in the moment, want a lot of novelty. It's harder for them to be in one space.
So because they want a lot of novelty, that's somebody who's very good at wanting polyamory a lot of times.
Yes.
But also the drawback is that you don't want to feel any of the negative. So,
and there's a lot of yucky feelings that can come up in polyamory.
Yes. I mean, obviously in any relationship, but polyamory is a very special case for that.
Yes. Because you have more people that you have to navigate.
Like, essentially, that's the only reason why is because there's just more.
There's just more. Yeah. So you're kind of forced to go into the yucky feelings more than you can kind of close your eyes in other times.
So that's a good segue into talking about polyamory. Mm-hmm. So the definition of polyamory, if you do not know, but I feel like at this point, everybody in the whole world knows, but I know that can't possibly be true. But the definition, poly meaning many, amory meaning love. So many loves. So it's, to me, just the freedom to love as many people in as many ways as feels good to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And there's kind of different like buckets of non-monogamous relationships, and some people will put a lot of put it all in one bucket, or will confuse different buckets.
Yes.
Right. So do you want to talk a little bit about what relationship anarchy feels like to you? Cause I know we both kind of feel that.
So I lean more toward relationship anarchy, which is sort of just letting each relationship become what it is and be what it is, rather than, I'm married and this relationship looks like this and has to look like this.
Right.
And this is my friend and this relationship has to look like, it's like a very,
prescriptive.
Yeah. It's very opposite of that. It's sort of just letting your relationships, because to me, this is the easiest way to practice, because relationships as a general rule ebb and flow and change over time. Mm-hmm. And if you are so boxed into what it needs to look like and be like, you might at many points in your life be very miserable because it's not going to do that. So relationship anarchy for me is, it works the best for me. Yeah. In that way.
Yeah, totally. And we can put in our show notes from the episodes, like links for people to read more about each kind.
We want to put, have you read the relationship, the
smorgasbord or
the,
whatever?
Yeah, the manifesto.
Yeah, yeah,
we can put that. We'll put that in there.
Yeah,
because I love it.
Yes, because it's like you can take from, it's like a table of food and you're like, it's
right,
not that people are food, but you know what I mean? Like,
well, like you might have a friend who you feel very comfortable with, like snuggling and physical intimacy that's not sex, but you're just friends.
Yep.
I mean, you really are just friends. Whereas if you are married, that friendship might not be allowed. You know,
if
you
if you're monogamous and married.
If you're monogamous and married.
Yeah.
So relationship anarchy does not have to be specifically polyamory.
Right.
Lots of people who are monogamous practice relationship anarchy because they want just freedom to be how they be.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think that's where things can, the waters can get muddied, because if we're talking about many loves, I would argue we all have many loves because we love our friends.
Right.
But, you know, maybe some people don't feel that same way about it. But yeah, it's just relationship anarchy is relationships can all look different and are all important.
Yes. That's the other thing, is that there's no one, no hierarchy.
Right.
Which I feel like, for me at least, that's very, very important, because I need to be able to say right now this is the most important thing, or right now this person is most important to me, without anybody telling me that I can't do that.
Right. And let need show up when they need to. Right. Like, and, and I don't think we mentioned at the top of the episode, Shiloh is also married. So, we both are married and then have other partners. So in a, we are... in the eyes of the law, we are married to one person.
Yes.
But have other partners, and different partners can take precedence in a certain situation.
Right.
You know?
Yes. So, I mean, and then you come into things like you guys have little kids.
Right.
And sometimes that takes precedence.
Right. Yes. And my best friend, who is also polyamorous, him and I have had lots of conversations about that, of where, because he has little kids too as well, that are a little bit younger even than ours. And what, like, the kids are always going to take some sort of priority.
Right. Yes.
And because of the nature of the person that you had the children with, like,
that, yes,
there's going to be some.
Then that is, what is that?
Descriptive.
Descriptive. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Not prescriptive. It's not prescribed that it has to be this way.
It's just because of the nature of the relationship.
Right. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's relationship anarchy.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about poly, like, kind of,
I know it's hard for Shiloh and I think, because we feel like polyamory and relationship anarchy go very similarly together, but I would say that there are people that practice different forms of polyamory that maybe are more prescriptively hierarchical.
So what might that look like?
That might look like someone in a marriage like we are, where they are putting that person as the number one, and it's hard. I feel, I always have
it
a hard time
feels
discussing.
Feels yucky talking about,
well,
it.
Well, because it's just not how we operate, right? Like, but I know that there are people, and I think especially, I mean, you've been poly longer than me. I feel like when people first go into polyamory, they have all these rules. And if they are opening up a relationship that was already established, then they will start off with a lot of rules, because that makes them feel like it's safer.
So like when Randy and I first started polyamory, we started with a lot of rules, and we started with we are like, our relationship is like the main thing. We're gonna, we're always gonna focus on this relationship, and over time that became very restrictive. And if over time it felt like we weren't actually being fair to the people that we were dating for us. Now, there are other people who practice a hierarchy, and if you have partners who are completely on board with that, then do whatever feels good to you.
Because it's about consent in the end, right? And as long as the other partners are consenting to it, I think that where it gets into trouble is where the person that's dating your spouse, if they're not consenting to that kind of polyamory, then it can get really...
Tricky. Yeah,
you know,
there can be a lot of things can come up, a lot of discomfort can come up and right. that style of relating.
And then the other ones we have on here are on our little outline here, because we're fancy like that. but are more sex-based non-monogamy. Yes. So some people will just say ethical non-monogamy or E&M or consensual non-monogamy, C&M. And that kind of encompasses all of it. But some people think of that as just sex. Then there's swinging, which is more two established couples playing with each other in a sexual way. And then there's also don't ask, don't tell. And that's where I struggle with don't ask, don't. I wouldn't date someone that was don't ask, don't tell, because I don't like the fact that their other partner is
right.
not want is they know that they're doing it. So they, I guess it is consented to, but it's also, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I think for me, I wouldn't do it unless I was having just a sex-based relationship with someone.
Right.
If I am having feelings for someone and I want to be able to explore those feelings and like be in love with someone, don't ask, don't tell wouldn't work for me, because mm-hmm. You are then very restricted on the type of relationship you can have with that person.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And that's similar to what we were talking about a little bit with, the hierarchical polyamory. I know that in the past I dated someone that was married and their partner put a lot of rules on what they were quote unquote allowed to do with other people. And so when someone that's like not in your relationship is telling you, you're not allowed to say, I love you. You're not allowed to have overnights. You're not, you know, that, yeah. that sort of stuff can feel really yucky for me personally.
Right. Yeah. So I think it really just kind of depends on what your preferences are and what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, those are just all things to consider mm-hmm. when, if you decide to like strike out on this path, because the really twisty one,
we could do a whole episode on like,
and we're throwing like a lot of information.
Yes.
into this episode, and it might feel a little muddled and confusing because this is our first episode and yes. we're like, we don't know what we're doing.
Yes. But we're excited because we love relationships and the Enneagram.
Yes. And we like to talk. So, yes. so we will get into this in more depth later, mm-hmm. a lot of this. Mm-hmm. So,
so we were going to say the growing interest in polyamory.
Yeah.
Right?
What do you know? Have you noticed?
Well,
what do you know about it?
You tell. Sometimes I wonder if it's because we're in such a polyamory right. bubble that I'm like, oh, everybody's doing it. No, we just have our bubble. But I'm very open and out, both, you know, in my social life, in my business, and everybody knows that I'm polyamorous. And so I have had more people bring it up to me. Like when yeah. you start talking about things, they're like, oh, I've thought about that, or I did that in the back in the day or before kids or whatever.
Right.
I feel like there's a lot of, again, this could be a whole other episode. There's a lot of reason for the growing interest of it. And I think people are realizing that the traditional ways of relating
yeah.
just don't always fit for them.
Right. Yeah. And I think that a lot of times when you find something isn't working, you overcorrect. So a lot of people try polyamory
yeah.
because they think this is the answer to my yeah. dissatisfaction with monogamy. But I don't know that that's always necessarily
right.
the case. It's not a good fit for mm-hmm. everyone. But I do think that there are lots of things that we can take from polyamory
yes.
if we want to be in a monogamous relationship, that can be very, very beneficial.
Totally.
Read
Polysecure is a good place
yeah,
to start,
yeah.
right? Like, it's I tell people that all the time. Like, you don't have to be polyamorous to get a lot out of that book. And she actually has a new book that just came out last year called Polywise.
Who's the author?
Jessica Fern.
Fern, yeah.
I had to think about
right.
it. Yeah. And she, someone, I forget who I was talking to, but had heard her talk saying that she wished that she'd written Polywise first. So I'm curious. I have not read Polywise yet. Have you?
I haven't
yeah,
read it.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. So it's a lot of Polysecure is about forming secure attachments in your relationship. So it doesn't really matter whether you're polyamorous or monogamous, but understanding
right, yes.
how to form secure attachments.
Yes. Because insecurity happens
everywhere,
all over the place in every relationship, really. Yeah. So, yeah, those are just some good things to know. And I, so yeah, I do think that people are looking for something, for an answer, because I think that traditional monogamy just isn't really, mm-hmm. I don't know mm-hmm. that it works mm-hmm. for long term.
Right. Well, and
every time.
Yeah. And there are people that are married for years and years and years and, you know, but it, even when we're not talking about relationships, I think about like, we're unique in our structure of our family of yes. like,
I'm going to say we're winning polyamory.
We are kind of, I know people look at us as like, we're not the average though. So anybody right. listening to this that is like, huh, that sounds great. I think in some ways we got lucky in
yes,
that, like
totally.
Emily and my husband, Chris, we all live together. And then Shiloh was with us about half the week. Yeah. So her husband and my husband joke that they have like partial custody.
Custody.
Yeah. Cause she's living with us half the week, but, and it's wonderful to have that many adults in the house and that many people to help care for our kids. I mean, as a parent, I'm like, how do people not parent with 3.5 right, parents yeah. in the house?
And then like today we're recording this yes. podcast and Kelly's girlfriend Emily and my husband Randy are taking the kids to get ice cream. I think right now I just saw them walking out the door.
Yep, that's probably what they're doing, and they might be painting Randy's toenails later, who knows.
So we're like this big awesome weird family.
It is the goal, I think, for a lot of people, but it's not, don't expect that out the gate
right,
if
yeah.
you're jumping
yes,
into polyamory.
That's true,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
I did read an interesting statistic
Ooh,
today.
Tell me the statistic.
As I did maybe 5 minutes of research.
Awesome. This is, yes.
So they did a study about adults in the U.S. who are interested in polyamory and okay. would try it.
Okay.
And it turns out that it's 1 in 6 adults would try it, which also is the ratio of people in the United States who have a cat. 1 in 6.
So, of course you would know that there's a cat. Her husband is very, he's like cat man, Randy. So I'm not surprised. I love it.
So you're as likely to have a cat as you are to try polyamory.
Yes. I love a good cat polyamory.
And
they,
I mean, if you like, if you're mixed up, you have a cat and you're polyamorous.
So what does that mean? Between all of us, we have 4 cats, right?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
We're just,
I don't know. We're beating all the averages. So...
Yeah, so we're your role models for this, apparently, because we have 4 cats in a polyamorous family. Yeah. So I think, yeah, a lot of people are looking towards it. I mean, and just the economy, like there's one polyamory creator that I follow that has like little stickers or whatever that say monogamy in this economy. Like, you know, it's
right.
It's tough. It's
yeah.
tough.
I mean, yeah. So it's more is almost always,
but there's challenges that come with it. Right. There's,
right,
and that's
yes.
kind of what we were going to talk about, I think, next.
Yeah. So let's talk about the intersection of Enneagram and polyamory.
Yes. Yay. And I feel like we've been talking about it, right?
Right. So yeah, for sure.
How it can be helpful is knowing what each of our partners are and what their partner's partners are, to know how to communicate, right?
Right. Yes. So do you have an example? Like, so you and Emily,
yes.
like with your numbers, like,
yes.
do you have an example
of how that,
of how
can
that
be...
might?
Yeah. I mean, I think that... So I'm a 2 and she's a 6. And since 6s are the most concerned with feeling secure, it can feel hard for her, like it harder for her maybe than a different number to feel secure. Mm-hmm. And so I know that I need to make sure I'm really making her feel secure if I'm with somebody else or, you know, anything in that situation. Like I have to focus on the feeling secure. And then on the flip side, she knows that I need to feel loved. So I just need to be reminded that I'm loved.
Right. Yes. Know? Yeah, for sure. And that makes you feel safe.
Yes.
And has it been helpful to know that information?
Yes, very much so. And I know I'm probably biased because I love Enneagram and I loved it even prior to polyamory, but I think that knowing what the person's motivation is and what makes them feel safe. I'm trying to think of a number that's like not within our polycule. Shiloh and I's goal is to get every number in our polycule. Yeah.
What are we missing so far?
Well, you and Randy, we've got 2 9s. We've got a 5. My husband is a 5. Emily's a 6. I don't think we know what Randy's new partner is.
No, we don't know.
We got to, and then we also speculate on like what kids are. I think Lily's a 5 too, right? Your daughter.
Lily's actually a 7.
Oh, she's a 7. Oh, mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. That's right. So we've got a 7.
Yes.
Within our sphere. so we're missing.
Do we
know,
have a 3?
I'm curious how, I'm going to have to look this up for a future episode of what like the number of numbers, you know, like what is the most common? What is the least common?
Right, yeah.
Cause I feel like I don't get 3s a lot. Like when I'm teaching my classes and I have people figure out their Enneagram, I don't get that one as often.
Do you think that people don't want to admit that they're a 3?
Could be. They're like, I don't want to be the gold star person.
I know.
That's not what I want.
I don't want to admit that.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, so a 3 is they're wanting to be the best, or they're wanting to feel like they're achieving or they're winning or that sort of thing. So I would imagine a 3 in polyamory would struggle if they felt like they're other partner was better than them in some way.
Oh yeah,
like that would be more of their struggle versus like as a 2 I would be like, well, did they not love me as much as they love, you know?
Right. Yeah, like, so this is good. Let's talk really briefly about like what might be a struggle for each number.
Okay, so we just started in the middle with 3 because why not. So 3s would struggle of if they felt like their partner's partner or their metamor was better than them. 4s would potentially struggle, and we're generalizing here, right? I hope down the line we'll be able to interview people that have different numbers and get more of like from the horse's mouth, so to speak. but we'll just give you kind of a general idea. 4s might struggle with not feeling like special enough, and I know people that are 4s that are polyamorous, and I have seen that in action. Of like,
so their motivation is
feeling special or unique. Yeah.
So they would struggle if they did not.
If they felt like.
If they don't have a way to feel special.
Yes. Yeah. So they need. And so someone who is partnered to a 4 would need to help them feel special when they're out with other partners. Maybe.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yes.
5s are always hard. 5s are trying to feel understood. And so I would imagine if they felt like their needs weren't understood by their partner, that would be a struggle.
Right. Yeah.
If they're trying to, and they also, I think, have a hard time saying their needs too.
Definitely.
So if they, first of all, have a hard time saying it, and then they feel like their partner's not understanding that they need an extra cuddle after their person is on a date with someone else.
Yeah. Some sort of reconnection or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, for sure.
6s we already talked about with Emily, right? Wanting to feel secure, and feel like you're not, you're like, we all have abandonment issues. I think maybe that's just my bias.
No,
about
I think that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It's, who hasn't been abandoned in their life over and over and over again? Just me. What?
Here's our trauma. We'll just drop our trauma for you. Yay. But, and that's a good example, right? Like, we all have abandonment stuff, but a 6, that's going to hit harder because they're the security is not being abandoned. And so if they feel abandoned, that's a problem.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
7s would probably feel like if their autonomy is being traipsed on, or they are not able to do what they want and have freedom. Their freedom is a big thing for 7s and trying to have fun.
Would you say also because they like novelty that they might get bored?
Yeah.
And that could be an issue.
Yeah. And jump from relationship to relationship.
Yeah. And never really settle down because they're always looking for
something more.
The novelty.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we talked earlier on about hard feelings coming up. Hard feelings are hard for everybody, but for someone who really avoids feeling any sort of hard feelings.
They would have a very hard time communicating, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or a more hard time.
Totally. And then 8s, they are going to feel like a big struggle if they're not in control of what's happening. Mm. And will do anything to grasp back at that control.
Yeah.
And if they can't control their partner, because honestly, nobody can control their partners, even in monogamous relationships. There's right. a lot of...
That is a false...
False sense.
Yeah. False sense of security yeah. that you're in control of anything
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
So enjoy the rest of your day.
It's true, though.
You're not in control.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And so that would be a struggle if they feel out of control of their partner, of their own feelings, of any, all of that would be a struggle for eights.
Yes.
You want to talk about nines?
Gosh. Okay. So for a nine, if it feels chaotic and I don't know what's happening because it feels chaotic and everything feels like if it feels up in the air, like it feels like I don't have a place to put my feet,
mm-hmm.
then I just don't feel good and I feel very scared and mm-hmm. I feel very anxious.
Mm-hmm.
If I know like, if I can tell, like, it's really hard for me to like put it into words, like
sure.
trying to keep it with like the harmony thing
sure,
and
sure,
calm,
sure.
but I don't feel calm when I feel like everything's up in the air and I don't know, who I am. Like, so for nines, a lot of times, like our identity is very based in the people that we are with.
Yeah.
So if my identity feels threatened or like I don't understand who I am with you because you have this other partner and this other partner, I don't understand like who am I to you. If I can just be reminded of that,
mm-hmm.
then I feel much better.
Mm-hmm.
But some people get tired of telling you that over and over and over again. And some people are not people that I'm in a relationship with anymore, so it doesn't matter. But I have experienced people who get tired of having to tell you. And for me, it's a constant thing until mm-hmm. I feel very, really like,
mm-hmm.
you know, secure.
I know you've said in the past to me, like, I don't know where I fit. Like, that's
let's do this and then let's talk about that.
Okay. Okay. We're going to talk about one and then we'll come back to it. So one's doing it right, you know, so feeling like they're doing polyamory the correct way when mm-hmm. they're, spoiler alert, there's no correct way, but that is, there's no correct way for anything.
Right.
So ones
no,
are
it's all just
made striving, up. Forever striving for the right thing. But the shoulds, and I would imagine someone struggle with polyamory because it is counterculture or how, I mean, again, we talked about how it's becoming more mainstream, but I would imagine as a one, you would struggle with, because our society is so monogamy minded that you're like doing the wrong thing.
Right. Yeah. And that would really feel, that would affect all of your relationships if you always felt like they were wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
So in September of last year, Kelly and Chris and Emily moved into a house
right before I had a major surgery and Shiloh and Emily's birthday. It's great. We did it all.
So they moved into a house together and it made sense for me to come and stay 3 days out of the week.
Right.
So I started that. Now, before that, our dynamics were, you know,
more separate.
They were separate, but like we were really, we knew what we were doing in that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a whole new change. And when my life gets kind of like switched around and mm-hmm. changed, I have a very hard time finding, like figuring out like, where do I fit now?
Mm-hmm.
Which side note is why I do not like group texts because I don't understand what I'm I even doing here.
But she hearts everything. She is the thumbs up, that's cheerleader. Yay. Everybody's happy. We're going to do all the hearts. So I like having her in group texts because my husband is not a group texter either. And his responses are like, okay. But then Shiloh's over here with the hearts. So just put that out there.
So it was really hard. It was very hard for me for several months because I didn't understand like, how do I fit here?
Mm-hmm.
And so like even things like when they lived in another house mm-hmm. and Kelly would be gone. And so then it would be Chris and me and hanging out with the girls. And mm-hmm. it was a very specific way of being. Mm-hmm. And so then this new way was really confusing to me. So I spent a lot of time just like
hid in the room,
in my room, because I was like, I'm uncomfortable and I don't know. And then, I had a hard conversation with you because I was like, we were talking about it, and I know you're probably like, that wasn't a hard conversation, but to me it was a hard conversation.
No, see, and it was relieving to me because as a two, I was like, Shiloh's just hiding in the room and doesn't like me anymore. Like, what's happening? Like, I want to feel loved, right?
Right.
So yeah. It actually was like this is a perfect example of like, for me, I was like, oh, good, we're okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And as like knowing about the Enneagram, like it makes sense. Yeah. And I was able to say, so just so you know, I'm very triggered by being here because I don't understand my place in this system.
Yeah.
And, and so we were able to talk about it though. And, both of us ended up feeling relieved
better
and like, oh, I see, you know, I understand.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, that was a real life example.
Yes. I love it. I love it. And I love, like, we've fallen into our own rhythm now and I'm sure things will shift and I'm going to have another surgery and it's going to be a whole, you know, things have shifted over time, but it's nice now. Like, Emily's gone to work, Chris is taking the kids to school, and like Shiloh and I have our like, let's check in the morning time. You know, it's just, it feels like our norm, but it took a while to get there.
Yes.
And when you were talking before, I was thinking about back when you and Chris were first together, because they've been together almost 3 years now. I think it was like your first overnight and I like set up the bed for you. And this is a good example of our numbers too, because that was my like, I'm being helpful. I'm showing you that I love you and that you're part of this. And I remember Chris said that you said you felt like, this feels good. Like, I feel like I'm accepted into this dynamic.
And that was great.
Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't know at that point, like, we didn't know anything about each other.
We hardly knew. But back then, we started it off on a good foot. But yeah, totally.
So, yeah. So, let's see. What else is on our outline?
We were going to talk. Oh, that was all about how it can be beneficial. And
right. Hopefully those examples can show that it can be very beneficial to creating, like, to understanding people and understanding what they need from you and you being able to communicate what you need back.
Right. Right. And I have to say, Shiloh has these pomegranate earrings on right now that I love. And I totally thought were placentas at first. And I keep looking at them while we're talking. I'm like,
and so
it does look like a placenta.
Catchphrase of the day is Randy saying, Kelly, not everything is a placenta.
Which, when you're in birth work, a lot of things look like placentas. And I want a placenta tattoo, too. So there's that. This podcast is going to have a lot of side tracks like this. So just be prepared.
That's just the way we do it.
That's how we go. We were going to talk about, like, common challenges in polyamorous relationships. I think just now we talked a lot about communication. But, like, jealousy and boundaries. Can you think of anything where that has showed up maybe in your previous relationships, too?
Well, for instance, I was dating somebody who had an ex-wife who decided that they wanted to get back together with this ex-wife. Mm-hmm. Now, because I always need to know where I fit and I was not a wife, you know, there's also some monogamous programming, right?
Totally.
Like where you think wife, oh, that's like the bigger commitment. That's like the bigger relationship.
Right.
And so in my, even though like I'm freaking married too, but like,
but our brains do weird shit when we've been programmed this way.
Right. Yeah. So in my head, I'm thinking, oh, if he gets back together with this person, that shifts me out of the position that I'm in. And then I don't know where I fit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of jealousy and me needing constant reassurance over and over and over again of who I am to him and how would I fit. Mm-hmm. And he was good some of the time, but even I know that there people have like limits.
Sure.
Some people have limits. And for somebody who doesn't maybe understand that, like where I was coming from, it would be hard to want to continue to give reassurance. And some of it has to come from yourself too. But,
But you're also allowed to ask for your needs. I think that can get into like toxic polyamory where it's like, your shit is your shit and you have to deal with it.
Yeah, which is untrue. Yeah. If anybody tells you that, that's bullshit because we have to
support our partners.
Basic rule of life, people, is don't be an asshole.
And that applies to monogamous, polyamory, just don't be a dick.
I think if that is your lens for life, then you're doing pretty fucking good.
Woo! You win. You win. Don't be a dick.
But so, and yes, and also as a nine, I have a real hard time having needs because needs feel like they're creating disharmony.
Yes.
So it was sort of a double whammy of like, I'm having this need. I'm afraid to say it because I'm going to make him feel a certain way that's going to make me feel uneasy because it's going to shake up our calm. So a lot of times I just didn't say anything at all. And I'm going to let you know that it was a shit show.
So don't not do that.
Good. Do not recommend.
But that's another good example of how a lot of the numbers can struggle with having needs. It's just for different reasons. So like for me as a two, I struggle with having my needs shared because I'm afraid that people won't love me if I have needs, whereas I'm willing to bend over backwards to take care of their needs. So I have a hard time speaking it up, but it's for a different reason.
Right. And I want to take care of people's needs because then it all goes back to homeostasis.
Yes. Or I can think like a five would struggle with sharing their needs because they feel like they're not going to be understood. Or an eight feels out of control by sharing needs because they're not supposed to have needs. They're supposed to just do it all themselves. Right. Yes. You know? So there's examples where every number struggles with that.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So you talked about was that jealousy or boundaries?
That was jealousy. Boundaries is a hard one. I'm pretty good at boundaries some of the time.
That's because she has an eight wing. We'll talk about wings later.
But sometimes, again, a boundary feels like a need, which feels like I'm disrupting. Mm-hmm. I'm disrupting everything by setting this boundary and I don't want to cause any chaos.
Right. Yeah. And boundaries for me as a two, it's like if I set a boundary, then they're not going to love me. Whereas if you don't set boundaries, you're going to crash and burn and not have any sort of relationship.
Well, right. Yeah. You have to have boundaries.
Right.
And I know that boundaries are hard for everybody. Like, choose a number, like just pick one.
We've got little cards in front of us.
Five. Why would a boundary be hard for a five?
I think it kind of goes back to what we were just saying too, of like they feel like they're not going to be understood, right? They're going to try to set a boundary and then it's not going to be understood,
right? Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're talking about boundaries in one context versus like in polyamory, you can have boundaries with what feels comfortable for you of your partner with another partner, but those aren't rules. Like, we get into this real murky territory of rules versus boundaries, right?
In polyamory looks like if you do this, I'm going to do this. So if you it's not never have an overnight with a person because that makes me uncomfortable. That's not a boundary.
Yeah, that's a rule.
That's a rule. But if you have an overnight with a person and you don't tell me about it first, I am going to something.
Yeah. Or feel cheated on, right? Like people talk about, there's no cheating in polyamory. Yes, there is. If you have agreements or boundaries in place that are then overstepped, like that can feel like cheating.
Like, for instance, if you go on a date and you're going to have sex with them, just like text me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like make sure that you wear a condom.
Yeah.
You know, until we've talked about, you know, that
boundaries around STDs, I think,
so
are huge.
Yeah. If you are a person who is like, well, I'm not going to do that, then you have just cheated on your partner.
Right. Right.
So it's not just a free for all.
Yeah. That's we want to bust that myth. Yeah,
that's what people think,
because
it's a free for all. It's not.
And no, it's hard work.
It's hard. And people say, oh, you just want to be polyamorous because you want to have sex with a lot of people. And I'm like, dude, I could have sex with a lot of people and just not be polyamorous. And that would be way fucking easier than this.
Yes.
I mean, now we're like in a rhythm, but getting to this point has been hard, but it's been so worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I could never go back to living another way, to be honest.
Well, and I think a lot of it comes down to like the things that you learn about yourself amongst it, right? It's not because we're in a lot of ways, you're not forced to do that deeper work if you are in a monogamous relationship, because there is more like that false sense of security. Right.
Yes.
So you're not forced to do the icky yucky work of like working through your shit.
Right. Because even though we say you don't have to, like, it's not like, oh, that's your shit, so own it and work through it. Mm-hmm. Like, even though that is a thing, it also is important to work on yourself just for yourself, mm-hmm. because you'll be miserable if you don't. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times in monogamy, you're right, we don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. So we don't do it. Mm-hmm. And that could be one of the reasons why a lot of times monogamous people are miserable, because they're not working on their shit.
Or they're like, this isn't working with this person, so I'm going to get divorced and try again. Right. Like, I'm going to,
without fixing any of their own things,
underlying stuff.
So then if you end up with the same problem over and over and over again in a relationship, it is not the other person. Yeah,
that's a spoiler alert. Again, that is not how it works.
Even if it's your own trauma calling in the same person over and over and over again in a different body, that's still you.
Trauma is good at that. Yeah. No, and Emily and I have talked a lot about that, because I am her first polyamorous relationship.
Right, yes.
So her coming out of like where she was programmed to be before and how relationships were before, it's like, oh, it can be like this, you know? It's
right,
like,
yeah.
It's, like, it's exciting to learn that...
that there is another way. But like, I do think... like we said, that there's a lot of things from polyamory that can transfer well into monogamy, mm-hmm. To just create more meaningful, more spacious, mm-hmm. more beautiful relationships, mm-hmm. in a monogamous context. It's just pulling out like the things that can apply.
Right.
So, right. And hopefully there'll be some crossover and we could shed some light on that too.
Totally. And maybe in the future we'll have somebody on who is monogamous and like how the Enneagram works for them, you know,
right, yeah.
And how it deepens their friendships too, right? I think when we're saying monogamy, we're saying it almost in like a specifically sexually monogamous context, because again, I feel like we all are polyamorous,
well, right,
and that
yeah.
we love everybody, you
right
know.
Yeah,
but like, we have a different view.
Yes.
Well, I think that's probably, I mean, we're almost at an hour here.
Yeah, so
our
I think we're good.
First episode,
yay,
giving like a
it.
Brief overview and the intersection, and we will go much deeper in future episodes.
And so, more specific.
Yeah.
No, it won't be just like a bunch of random information and facts. Here, take all this in. Take it.
I mean, there might be some of that, because that's how we roll. But we'll have information in the show notes where you can like find more and connect with us and ask questions. Or
and some of the specific things that we talked about, like the Anarchist Manifesto,
yes.
and the Polysecure book,
yes.
we'll link to those too.
Yes, yes. So
thank you so much for tuning in to Can We Get Your Number? So until next time, stay curious
and stay connected.
Thank you so much for listening to Can We Get Your Number? Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at Can We Get Your Number? And if you want to get in touch with Shiloh or Kelly, you can shoot an email to canwegetyournumberpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.